The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Nice to see everybody. Thank you for coming. Well, as we see, our hall is a happy blend of Acharanatha and Vaisak, which seems a little incongruous. You've got him sitting grim and fierce on his rock, and you've got all these little flowers and flags and heaven knows what else, and it's plants and all kinds of stuff. So it looks a bit, you know, different, but actually it's rather nice because you need both. You need both the firmness of Acharanatha, you know, sitting on his rock, and also you need something to lighten it a bit. You don't want it to be sitting in the dark all the time. Usually, Acharanatha is portrayed sitting in a dark spot. You know, he looks kind of in a bit of a dark place, and all. He doesn't look very hospitable, dry, and kind of dark at best, if not nothing. And he's not sitting among trees and flowers and little deers and stuff like this. He's not smiling, no. He's sitting on his rock, like, here I is, and here I sit, you know. Not in some bright heaven with devas and things either, just sitting on his rock, by himself, it would seem. Firmly grounded here in this Saha world of suffering, that's the thing, you see. He's not somewhere else, he's right here with us, even though it doesn't look like it. Sitting still in the midst of the fires of greed, anger and delusion. Some of us love Acharanatha, this may become apparent, and some of us may never have heard of him, but most of us here are somewhat familiar with this. He's not actually a bodhisattva, he's really a king of light. He used to be a little servant in ancient India. He was a servant of Vairochana Buddha. So he wears kind of the clothes, the ornaments of an Indian servant 2,500-3,000 years ago, but he's gradually crept up in status. And now he's a king of light, but he's still sitting on his rock. He's not on some kind of fancy throne. Sitting in the midst of the fires of greed, anger and delusion. Just sitting still, just sitting there. He's not trying to put the fires out. He's not trying to pretend it's not there. He's not trying to put more wood on the fire. He's just sitting there. Simple, but not easy. You never see him smile. He always looks grim and wrathful. You know, with his teeth protruding, one up and one down, there's reasoning to that, but I won't go into it. And yet, he's the very heart of compassion. This story that I tell over and over again because I love it, about the origins of, one of the origins of Acharanatha, there's a legend that many, 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 many years ago, of course, Avalokiteshvara has made his vow to save all beings. And thousands of years and eons later, it's just as bad as it ever was. Beings are not ceasing to suffer. There's still all kinds of awful stuff going on. And Avalokiteshvara despairs and says, oh God, I've failed, I've broken my vow, I haven't done a bit of good. And he shatters into 1,000 pieces because part of his vow was, if I don't keep my vow, I'll break into 1,000 pieces. Sure enough, there he is in bits. And Amida Buddha sees this and says, well, we can't have this. So he glues them back together. Special cosmic glue. But Avalokiteshvara's heart becomes Acharanatha because that wrathful aspect is the very heart of compassion. And that's why I love this story, because it looks so fierce and grim, and yet he is the very heart of compassion. And that's what we sometimes need. Sometimes when niceness doesn't work, we need a thump. And sitting still in the midst of our fear or anger or desire or whatever it might be, is in fact the essence of compassion. To do that is to practice compassion right there. It's the best thing we can do. Not to get pulled off our seat by getting dragged into all the things, you know, saying or doing something we would rather we didn't. Why did I say that, you know? Anger and desire. Very, very compelling, and whatever form they take, very convincing. I might be angry, but I'm justified. This is righteous anger. It's still anger, you know. You're still suffer, we still create suffering. It's just not very skillful. We can maybe feel it, but we don't have to voice it. And maybe we can just sit still in the midst of it, no matter how justified you might feel we are. Just to sit still and let it burn. This is compassion. Desire, you know, I really, really need this thing or this person. I won't be happy without it. Well, it's still desire, you know, no matter how you look at it. It's still wanting. Anatulanatha does not look away. He doesn't pretend it's not there. He doesn't justify. He doesn't cover it over. He doesn't feed it. So, well, yes, I really need this thing. He just sits still right in the middle. And he doesn't judge. He doesn't judge. The essential thing not to judge. Because when we judge, it's very, very hard to sit still. When we're judging ourselves or judging somebody else, we're not really sitting still. We're kind of wobbling on our rock or jumping right off to do something. If we're judging, we're berating ourselves or berating somebody else, or we're justifying and making excuses for ourselves or something, and it's not sitting still. But you can see, just look at it and see clearly, just to sit still and look. This is just ill will. This is just desire. No matter how annoying I may find this person, it's just anger. It's not their fault, it's mine. It's my, not fault so much, but it's my responsibility. I need to deal with this. This is just greed. No matter how much I may want this thing, will it actually make me happy? Probably not. The flames, it's easy to see anger and desire as a fire, because they burn. But what about delusion? You know, greed, anger, and delusion. Delusion feels more like a kind of cold fog than a fire. It doesn't seem hot in that way. But really, if you think about it, it's delusion that is the basis of our anger and desire and all that. So delusion is right in there. It just doesn't look so obvious. The basis of delusion is this idea of a separate self, a separate me, which we talk about all the time. Me, the important person. Me that needs this, that wants that, that doesn't like this, can't stand that person. Me and what I want and don't want is delusion, actually. And from that comes all our anger and desire, wanting this, not wanting that. It's pretty straightforward, really, in some ways. But sometimes this has a subtle flavor, but you don't always see. But Anatulanatha is sitting right there, looking it right in the eye, and not turning away and not calling it something else. If we could see that this sense of being a separate self is just a delusion, those flames would die down right away. You know, it's just a self. It's gone like this. It just withers, blown out, as it were, by a little wisdom, you know. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes we look and we think, oh, this isn't important at all. I don't need to get all upset about this thing. It's just me getting annoyed by this thing. Just let it go. Or, I don't really need that thing, that wonderful thing I looked at on Amazon. I'm sure, you know, I don't need it. I've got enough already. Just let it go. The whole of our economy is probably based, not entirely, but largely on, ooh, let's have that thing, you know. And then we have it and we think, where am I going to put it? And I've got one already. I've got two. You know. But we can see, you know, Anatulanatha's sort of wisdom that cuts through all this stuff. Without judgment, not saying, oh, you bad person wanting to get that thing, that's really, you know, gree. No, just saying, oh, I have enough already. It's okay. Just let it go. Wonderful. How easy it would seem, but no, not really. To see what we're doing, without looking away and without making a big judgment out of it. How wonderful to do that. Well, what about fear? You know, that seems like a kind of cold, foggy thing sometimes. That's based on a self, the delusion of a self, if anything is. Sometimes fear is completely immediate and necessary. Is a wild animal after me? I'm going to leave, you know. Or do something sensible. To be afraid of something that's a clear and present danger makes complete sense. It isn't always that way, though. Most of our fear is not like that at all. It's mostly fear of something a little more subtle. You know, fear of old age, sickness and death. Fear of the existential angst just being alive in this world, we have this sort of anxiety. Just if we're young, we're worried about what everybody thinks of us. The whole social media thing. What are they going to think of me? You know, I have to be not just a me self, but a virtual self, and maybe several virtual selves. How do I keep them all straight and have them all look happy and look good? And actually, it's deluded. They're completely empty, as is the real, apparent, seeming me. But there we go. Delusion. But to see it with compassion, you know. Everybody has fear. Just part of the human condition. And in this temporary body on this little planet zipping around in space with this little skin that we seem to be determined to destroy, it's, you know, normal to be afraid. And yet, usually that fear is based on me, you know, my life, my comfort, my people, you know. And although we may see, yes, this is just based on a seeming self, we still have to deal with it. Fear still arises. It's not like, oh, I'll just reason it away. Oh, yes, that's just fear. You know, it's not really helpful. And actually, Anatha is a guardian. He helps us with our fear. In some of these scriptures, we see, you know, this strong invocations of the guardian aspect of Achalanatha, who protects us, protects the temple in the evening, at nighttime. We have a ceremony for Achalanatha, our guardian. And we have several guardians, but he's definitely one of them. There he is, over there in his shrine, balanced with compassion. You see, it's not just vigilance, but also kindness and compassion. You have to have both. It is compassion. Well, speaking of fear, this world seems to be especially fearful at present. There's people being killed for no seeming reason, you know, this awful random killings. It's designed to inspire terror in people, and it does. It really makes people afraid. They go to church and they get shot. Kids go to school and they get shot. It's awful. Parents worried about sending their kids off to school, will they come back, you know? It's hard to imagine what that must be like. The external fears of the world, of all the, you know, the awfulness that goes on, and the internal fears which we all have. We can be afraid of illness, afraid of losing the people we love, afraid of their illness and suffering, our own illness and suffering, our own death. We're afraid of insecurity, you know, maybe I won't have enough money to last to my old age. Afraid of not finding the truth in this lifetime. That's a fear that, you know, it will arise. Will I waste my opportunity? Here I am, I have this chance to meditate, and I seem to be wasting a lot of it, you know. That fear that can arise and think, oh God, whole meditation period has gone by and I'm not in it, you know. Just do our best. We just to practice kindness, relinquishing judgment, just to do our best. It's just a fear. And just to do our best, I think, to have faith in that which is deeper than what we can judge or see. We can worry over all kinds of things. We can suffer from constant anxiety, that sort of nameless dread, fear without a seeming object, that maybe, you know, lie awake at night, or just every now and then, just a little, like a goose walks over our grave, as my mum used to say, you know, just a little, a little something, I don't know, a little breath down the back of our neck. But it's not the reality, you know, it's just fear. Inadequacy is a form of fear, you know. Afraid we're not coming up to expectation, our own or somebody else's. We're not, you know, we're letting people down, we're letting ourselves down, we're failing at everything. It's bottomless. Trying to be perfect is a form of fear. Again, it's bottomless. We can never be perfect enough. Trying to control everything. Have things our own way. Good luck, you know. It's just fear. It's really just fear. And if you can see, I'm just afraid. I'm just afraid of not having things the way I want them, or not having things the way I think it should be. So what? We may not be right all the time. That's a thought, you know. Just, you know, they're just forms of fear. And if we can recognize that, it helps us a lot, rather than being run around by the, oh, yes, I have to get this thing perfect. Why? Because I want to look good. Oh, I want to feel better about myself. Oh, maybe I don't have to kill myself in this endeavor, you know. And all these kinds of fears are really sort of the same thing when we deal with them in the same way. To sit still, not to run around trying to fix everything or run away from everything or cover it over pretending it's something else. Just to sit still. Sometimes we really want to run away or look away or distract ourselves or anything rather than look at that thing. But if we can actually just sit and look at things right in the eye, they kind of shrink down. They say that horses are easily startled because they see things in their peripheral vision much larger than they actually are. And I think that's interesting. They can see much larger than they are because they're not really looking at them. They look around and they're, oh, that's not so bad. If it shrinks down, you know, it's just a fear, not a huge thing to worry about. To sit still and look the fear right in the eye and not to judge it, to feel I shouldn't be afraid or this is stupid, you know. It may be unreal, but it's still fear. We're still human beings. We still have to deal with all this stuff. And if we can just be still with kindness, whether it's anxiety and inadequacy, fear of death, fear of losing people we love, fear of insecurity, whatever it might be, it's all the same thing really. It's just fear, wanting things a certain way, and we're probably not going to get them perfectly the way we want them. Life doesn't seem to be that way. But maybe we can accept what comes our way. And when we think about it, fear is usually about the future, what's going to happen. You know, we don't, there's no sense in being afraid of the past. It's been and gone, and we've got what we've got. We can't be afraid of something that happened last week. It's silly. Afraid of the present? Occasionally, you know, if we are in clear and present danger, we might, yes, be afraid and run off, and so we should. But usually, it's fear of the future that gets us. Fear of what's going to happen. Fear of, you know, the things that haven't happened yet and probably won't. The things that do happen are often not the things we've been afraid of. So we wasted all that fear on the wrong thing. So why bother? Easy to say, hard to do. And even if it's, you know, just something you're just about to do, just about to jump out of an aeroplane and put out a fire or something, well, it's still about the future. Am I going to land okay? You know, whatever it is, in a sense, it's just about the future. And it probably won't be half as bad as we think. If we mess up, we mess up. So what? It's okay. And here's another aspect of Achalanatha. As the one of the invocations says, excuse me, you're sitting still, rooted in the present moment, sitting in the eternal present. You can't sit still in the past. You can't sit still in the future. You can only sit still right now, here now, with everything I've got, whether it's memories of the past, fear of the future is here right now. And right now is why I sit with it. In this moment, in this world, we can only really deal with our fires of greed, hate, and delusion. In this moment, we can't deal with them yesterday. They've been and gone. Right now, what is arising right now for us? This is the only thing we can work with. That's what we have. If we're stewing on something that happened earlier, well, it's in the past, you know. Or getting something upset about something that somebody said. If we're worrying about the future, it's in the future. If it was something we want, it's a future thing. So anger is usually a past thing, and desire or greed is usually a future thing, if you think about it. We're wanting something. We haven't got it right now. If we got it, okay, we eat it or we do whatever we do with it. And it probably won't be as great as we thought. But in the present, right now, is our opportunity to sit still, right in the midst of all that, coming and going, wanting and not wanting, fear, desire, anger, despair, all that stuff, to sit still right in this moment, right on our rock. The opportunity to sit still, the opportunity to keep to the precepts, which is why he has his rope of the precepts, he's holding it out to us. He's not forcing it on us, time binding us up with it, offering it to us. Here you are. You can take it if you like. Here are the precepts. This will help you. You know, wonderful compassion. Nothing being forced on us. Just here it is. You know, to keep to the precepts helps immeasurably with our suffering, as most of us know. We don't have to be ruled by our fear and anger and desire and all that stuff. The precepts really help us with that. Great compassion. We can relinquish suffering. The heart of compassion is one of the kings of light, our Achalanatha. He's sitting in the dark, but he's a king of light. He brings the light of wisdom into those dark places in our minds, into our fear and despair and all that stuff we've been talking about. Selfishness, actually. It's a dark thing, selfishness. And sitting still brings a light of wisdom there. Ah, this is just selfishness that I really, really want this thing, which I know I really shouldn't grab. Or I really don't like being with that person, you know. Or whatever it might be, whether a small thing or a bigger thing, to bring that light of wisdom in, that sword to cut through delusion, the light of wisdom. So that's why he's sitting in the dark, you know. He's off in some heaven. Well, they're all bright as, you know, they don't need him there. But in the dark places, that's where we need Achalanatha, to sort of sit still right in the midst of the darkness, with vigilance and determination and the willingness to sit still, and also gentleness and kindness. There's that aspect too. He always has these beautiful ornaments to show he's not just a macho guy, he's also a beautiful, compassionate aspect of Avalokiteshvara. He has his hair's always done up on a plait, comes down his left side. That's his compassion for the world, coming down to us. You know, these things have these beautiful meanings. His compassion itself. The compassion of Varachana Buddha, actually, because as I said earlier, I think, he's one of his messengers. He's the emanation. He represents Varachana Buddha, the eternal Buddha, which is compassion itself. So, there he is, sitting still. Us, sitting still, right here in our present world. Not somewhere else, but here we are, in this moment, in this world, in this breath, on our hard rock out in the middle of the desert sometimes. But not always. Sometimes there are, you know, trees and flowers and nicenesses. But sometimes it's just, we're on our hard rock. But we're not alone. We're not just by ourselves. We train with others. We're always with other people. With the situations of our lives, the people in our lives, all the things we deal with, we're not just out in a desert by ourselves on our rock. Sometimes it feels like that, because when there's suffering, we tend to be thinking, here I am suffering and nobody knows how awful it is. But if we can kind of look outside that and see there's other beings around us, it really helps. We're all in this world together, better for better or worse. We're not separate in any way at all. And that really helps with our suffering. And when you think I'm suffering all alone and nobody knows what it's like, sometimes, you know, if we meet another person who's had exactly the same thing, it comforts us. That's why they have support groups. Ah, I know what this is like. I know what it's like to have this situation. We can help each other. And we still do our best to sit, excuse me, I'm all falling apart here. We still do our best to sit still, right in the midst of it all, doing our best, knowing we won't do it perfectly, but we just do our best. So here's Vaisakh coming up next week, the celebration of the birth and teaching and life of Shakyamuni Buddha. It's a joyous time. But joy comes from sitting still. In the long run, it's sitting still that brings us the true joy. So there is that connection. We wouldn't have this ability to sit still in this way without the teaching of the Buddha, which we celebrate. It all comes together. We have darkness and we have light. Sometimes we're sitting in the desert or so it seems, and sometimes we just have joy. We can't do either of them all the time. We have joy and sadness, dark and light, sorrow, happiness, all together. Sometimes we feel good and happy, sometimes we feel just terrible. But it's okay. We can sit still. Either way, it all comes and goes. None of it lasts forever. And so, not to cling on to the joy or the misery or either. It's easier to cling on to misery, actually, than to cling on to joy. We know the joy is going to pass because we have experience of that. Clinging on to misery, oh, we can grip on. We can grip on. But if we can just sit on our rock and let it come and go, the This is compassion. It's wonderful. And seeing the suffering in the world, you know, there's awful things that happen and there are good things that are done. We don't always hear about the latter. But to trust and to bear in mind there's all kinds of people trying to help the world, including us, and us doing our training. You know, it has an effect, more than we know and more than we see. We just trust in that and do our best to help by keeping to the precepts, doing what we can to help beings, and trusting that there's something that sustains us with all of this. The heart of compassion and the heart of faith. Compassion for ourselves and other beings, seeing the suffering in the world, not drowning in it, because we have that heart of faith that knows that there is something deeper than all of this within which we can sit still. That which is beyond all conditions. We try to sit still within that. Patience, gentleness, no judgment, kindness. And that's Ajahn Anatha's teaching for us today.